Welcome to Continued Success. I am Justin Clue. With me is Liz Rocher of Yahoo Sports.
Hello.
We have on our hands, folks, today, October 23rd. This is what we're going to do today. Liz, this is an official, I'm calling it now, new Phillies holiday today, October 23rd, 10/23, for reasons that we will get into momentarily. Because there's just too much to digest on a day like this, and for the rest of time for which people searching for content will be the priority of their day, primarily people in Phillies circles, they will talk about, you know, on this date in Phillies history, these things happened. Obviously, we're a minute or so away from the Phillies forging any new history in October, and certainly late October. So all we have is you know, the history of what's already happened on this date in Phillies for the Phillies. And the things that have happened on this date are twofold. They are both terrible, and we're going to talk about them. But I think because they both happened on the same day, it is time to reclaim this day, even before the Phillies themselves are able to, by like winning a postseason game in a cool way on this day.
Making the postseason and lasting to this day.
So I think we need to do something to reclaim it, to redefine it, because yes, we will. There has been pain caused on this day in the past that will live inside us forever, but it doesn't have to define us. But before we get to that, let's talk about a little current day news. Liz, Gold Gloves. You put a lot of your annual calendar revolves around the Gold Glove announcements, right? The announcements of who is a finalist and then final announcements saying who has won them, which will of course take place on November 3rd, which is absurd.
A day of no other literally no one will watch it. They're naming it on ESPN. I guess you could call it counter-programming, but literally no one's going to watch it.
I was going to say, like, watch what?
I might, because I don't want to watch.
Do they even have, like, a ceremony?
They
thought they just kind of tweeted it out.
No, like, Tuesday, November 3rd on ESPN at 7 p.m. You don't put a network and a time on there if that's not when something is being broadcast.
Incredible. So, yeah. So it's an event. Yay. Gold gloves. I mean, in general, before we get into exactly what's going on, I mean, how much does a gold glove mean to you?
I mean, it doesn't matter, but it's about, you know, it's about recognition when there's nothing else left. There's nothing else left for the Phillies to win this year except awards that have already been decided. And then it were decided before the end of the season. But yeah, it means to me, hey, the Phillies aren't entirely irrelevant. That's really it.
I mean, what we learned yesterday when the final, I agree with you, but I also think, you know, that there's not no emphasis to be placed on this.
Oh,
I think
yeah.
it's
an award for doing something great. Of course it's important.
I think in some cases, you know, like the Orioles obviously didn't have a ton to celebrate this year, but they have at least one. Yeah, I think just the one nominee, Anthony Santander in right field. And I think that's meaningful because it's a milestone. Santander was a defensive, basically liability, I feel like, last year. And this year, he, you know, yes, obviously COVID, shortened season, all that. But he improved enough to be named a Gold Glove finalist this year. And, you know, that's a milestone for him. That shows a ton of improvement. You know, yeah, you can look at the stats, but, you know, non-Orioles people aren't going to look at Anthony Santander's defensive metrics very closely or notice that he has improved. But in this case, they kind of just say in a very simple way, like, hey, we're giving this literal glove that has been turned gold to this guy because of how good his defense was. And you suddenly, your eyes are opened up a little more, but you're like, oh, I guess that guy, well, he must have really turned things around. So, I mean, stuff like that. If you're a baseball fan, you know, it's a baseball award. So that tells you a little more about what's going on. The problem is, when you're a team like the Phillies, and, you know, you're a good team. There's a playoff team in there somewhere, you know, barring, you know, there's going to be some adjustments made, obviously, but I think there's pieces in there that could make a playoff team. But, you know, at this point, they've put a lot of money in. They have received no awards. So, yes, it is something of a consolation prize to see a Phillies player up for an individual award like this. But there are no Phillies up for any of these awards.
No, there are not at all, actually. No.
Zero Phillies. Liz, are there any Phillies who should be up for a Gold Glove this year?
I would say JT Realmuto.
Mm-hmm. I think most people did.
I think that's where the – maybe Bryce Harper, he had some – he looked good this season, I think.
I mean, defensive metrics are hard and polarizing, especially, you know, the more modern versions of defensive stats. I think you'll find someone who can make an argument for or against just about every individual defensive stat there is.
Yeah.
JT Realmuto was obviously one of the first names that came up as far as being gypped because, I mean, Larry Boa tweeted about it. Greg Luzinski agreed with him. Obviously, these guys are, you know, they basically live at the Phillies stadium, so they're a little biased. But, yeah, I mean, it must be said, yes, again, shortened season and all that, but Realmuto's numbers were not what they were last year when he, mm-hmm. he did win one last year, right?
Yes, I believe he did.
So, you know, I think he finished that very high caught stealing percentage he had last year, that was his calling card, dropped to about 28% this year. And I think last year it was like under 50, but close. So, you know, yeah, less real estate, certainly. But yeah, he had 47% caught stealing percentage last year. And when he did win a Gold Glove and a Silver Slugger. And this year it was 25, actually. I was wrong. So, yeah, that is lower. Is he still among the top, I think, 5 or 10 all time in that category? Yes, absolutely. And is he still a great catcher? Yes, absolutely. Did the shortened season probably impact this? Yes, absolutely.
Yes, absolutely.
But at the same time, you know, if you're the person nominating, I mean, if you're the person nominating people for these awards, you know, there was a drop off in that category. That being said, Realmuto is still an unbelievable defensive catcher. And some of these assignments or, you know, naming of finalists seemed a little arbitrary. Seemed like, you know, in
what
some
is
cases,
Jacob Stallings doing on that list? What is he doing there? What? I mean, that's who I'm going to guess got Realmuto's spot. For yeah. some reason, I don't like. I see Wilson Contreras. Sure, I do. Did I watch any ex-Sigo Cubs game this season? No. I did watch some Reds games. I know that Tucker Barnhart is not bad. Congratulations to him. But what is who? Jacob Stallings. I'm so angry about that.
Yeah, it definitely seemed like, you know, the general, there wasn't a violent uprising or anything about it, but it seemed like there were the gentle pushback from Phillies fans of being like, can we even just get this one thing? Like, he's not even on the Phillies anymore. Like, just nominate
something.
Him. Nominate him so we can see our team listed nationally. I'll tell you something else. Somebody, I believe it was a producer at MLB.com, actually mentioned that I don't know how much, and I don't know enough about it to put any stock in it. I just think like, oh, okay, this is a way to measure players. But the stat outs above average, does that mean anything to you?
Sure. I guess I understand what it is.
I mean, it measures how far the fielder has to go, how much time he has to get there, how far he then is from the base runner, and... Mm-hmm. And on force plays, how fast the batter is on average. I have no idea how any of this gets quantified mathematically, but somebody does it. And based on that statistic, Gene Segura had the 5th best in all of baseball in that statistic. So, you know, I don't know. I feel like there's probably stats out there that negate that stat. Some more intelligent person than me would come on here and be like, yeah, but like he had like stumbly legs percentage was very bad, or brain farts per inning also very high, really cut down on his effectiveness. I would be like, yeah, that sounds like Gene, frankly. Yeah. But you know, he's a skilled defender, obviously. And even like Didi Gregorius looked, and this is my metric, is just having watched the Phillies and been like, wow, he looks good defensively. Didi looked great this year.
Yeah,
also,
he did.
Also, his name is the letter D twice. Like, how is that not a defensive giant get? yeah, he had some seamless defense this year, did Gregorius. So yeah, I guess that's another one that also worthy. Hell, I'll even say this. I'm wrong, but I'll say it. I didn't watch any first baseman more than I did Rhys Hoskins this year. he made a lot of diving stops. He had some misses on some, you know, some notable misses. But like for a first baseman, I felt like he made a lot of like diving stops this year. And that's probably the position where you focus on defense the least. So I feel like the bar is, you know, kind of low. But still, I know that there are skilled defensive first basemen in the league. It's just like, you know, if somebody's like, yeah, we have a first baseman, he hasn't hit well, but he's great on defense. You're like, okay, can we find another first baseman then? Because we kind of, that's not super important to us. So in Rhys Hoskins' case, I don't know. There are moments where he definitely looked good defensively as well. So, I'm not surprised by this, honestly. I'm not. But I do think that it wouldn't have been crazy to see Real Muto or Segura or Gregorius. And, you know, somebody can tell me, well, this, you know, look at these very simple stats that show otherwise, and that makes sense. But just having watched them, the eye test, I would say the Phillies had some great defenders this year. And yeah, Bryce Harper, he's a great defender. Like that whole narrative about him not being good in right field, the last year he was in Washington, I think that is gone. I think that was eliminated by his play in 2019. Did he get nominated for a gold glove last year? I mean,
oh, I don't know. He might have.
He definitely didn't win one.
No, he might not have even been nominated.
Yeah.
That felt like, I remember I thought he had been decent and it felt to me like it was payback for the Harper extravaganza, sucking up so much, off season time.
Do you know how many, Phillies were nominated last year for gold gloves
during a year? Let's just be clear, this is during a year that the Phillies had some truly atrocious and substandard defense. I think like this year, regardless of how they stacked up against, you know, other teams, they absolutely improved. They looked really good. I was happy to see that, you know, we didn't have to worry as much about balls, you know, leaking through the third base hole because Alec Bohm was pretty decent.
Alec Bohm looked great on defense, barring that one disastrous inning where he had like three errors in one inning. But yeah, he looked great this year too. That's true. And you know what? He's a finalist for NL Rookie of the Year. Or did they announce that? Or just the finalists? Boy,
I think they just announced the finalists.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, he is the finalist for that.
So we do have, as far as these awards go, that we do have one guy at least. I think last year, I bring this up because there were actually three Phillies nominated for gold gloves last year. JT Realmuto, obviously. Bryce Harper was nominated last year. Do you guess who the third one was?
Was it Gene Segura?
No.
No, who was it?
It was Aaron Nola.
Oh, that was my first instinct. And I thought, no, that was the year before.
I would not have guessed that.
Because I remember him being nominated at some point, and I thought, no, that wasn't that recently, because every day is a year now.
Yeah, it would have been his first. I don't think he won. He was up against Zach Greinke and Jack Flaherty. I don't remember him winning, but
no, he didn't win. I think one of the others definitely did.
Yeah, he did not win. I agree with you. I think defense, the Phillies have looked poor on defense at certain moments, but I think on the whole, this is not a team that's defenseless. This is a team that does, you know, I don't think the nominations here are not an indication that the Phillies have a dire defensive crisis on their hands right
exactly.
now. We are all aware of where this team's vulnerabilities are. I'm not sure it's defense just because there are no gold glove nominees this year. Yeah. Just another list the Phillies aren't on.
Pretty, there are many.
Pretty cool. You know who is on this list, Liz?
Who?
got a couple of former Phillies, if you're one of those people.
Tell me more.
Cesar Hernandez is up for a gold glove.
No, he's not.
In the American League.
I refuse to believe this.
Yeah, we got Cesar Hernandez in the American League up for a gold glove at second base. There are actually four nominees here, which is interesting. Typically, there's three. Cesar Hernandez is up against Nicky Lopez of the Royals, Danny Mandick of the White Sox, and Jonathan Scope of the Tigers. But yeah, Cesar's up for it. All remember Cesar, I'm sure. Another fresh memory for you, Liz. J.P. Crawford up for a gold glove. AL shortstops with Carlos Correa and Nico Goodrum of the Tigers. And, you know, Correa, obviously, the Astros. Yeah, so how are we feeling?
Certainly not like I want to walk into traffic.
Do you feel like, I mean, you know, this is obviously our reaction, but do you feel genuine regret that those two gentlemen are not on the Phillies team anymore?
Cesar, no. It's just frustrating that, you know, the year that he, you know, flashes gold glove stuff is the year that he leaves. You know, the year after he, you know, the Phillies let him go. And not that I want him to be here because it being here is a problem, but like, could you not have done that last year? Where was that?
I mean, it's not like Cesar was bad when he was here.
No, but I feel like he was always, you know, I feel like there were problems in his final year. I remember he had like a string of bad games.
There was a year where he was the base running gaff king. That kind of resurfaced a couple years later too, but you know, he got it under control. I mean, yeah, looking at Cesar Hernandez's numbers are it's really funny. Like, yeah, you know, there was a point where people were like, "Oh yeah, he might be the best leadoff hitter in baseball," and I think for like a couple of weeks at one point it was probably true. But he finished 2016 hitting .294 with a .764 OPS and led the league in triples with 11. In 2017, he again hit .294. His OPS jumped 30 points to .793. He only played in 128 games that year, but the next two seasons he played in all, you know, 161 games each. But batting average took a huge hit in 2018. Then went down to .253, and his OPS also sunk to .718. But then, you know, 2019, he hit .279. 2020, he hit .283 and led the league in doubles. So, you know, like, he's an effective offensive player, and now he's also a Gold Glove finalist. He's not on the Phillies.
No, he's not. That's something that is true. He's not on the Phillies. Yeah. I mean, there's no way I really would want him to be on the Phillies anymore, but like, I mean, of course it happens after he leaves.
Yeah.
Just the way.
That's the long and short of it. Of course now, but you know, at least, I mean, Michael Martinez went to the World Series after leaving the Phillies.
Remember
so,
that? Yeah.
You know,
like, that happened too.
This stuff happens. When you leave the Phillies and you stay in Major League Baseball, other things are going to happen. I mean, Michael Franco had like a multi-home run game early in the season. Actually finished the year with not terrible numbers, I'm pretty sure, in Kansas City. Yeah, yeah. So in 2019 for the Phillies, he hit .234 with a .705 OPS. This year for Kansas City, he hit .278 with a .778 OPS. Played in all 60 games. Only had 8 home runs. But, you know, somebody that they'll probably keep around for at least a little bit longer.
Yeah.
But you mentioned Cesar, and you said not Cesar. You don't have a lot of regret about Cesar not being on the team. But you didn't say that about J.P. Crawford. So I'm assuming that one stings a little more.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. No, I think he was still, I think he's still not a great hitter. But, you know, they're trying to do to Scott Kingery what J.P. Crawford might have been able to do and hit pretty much the same.
Yeah, I'd say JP, I mean, do you think he's got like an Andrelton Simmons kind of career? Well, Andrelton Simmons, he actually is a good hitter. I always think that he's not, but I think he's better than I always think he is. Yeah, he's always better than I think he is. So I don't know. If JP Crawford goes into this Mariners component of his career and he's you know, he's a slick defender, he's a perennial Gold Glove contender, but he hits like, you know, 240, 250. Is that somebody you continue to regret not having on the Phillies?
Yeah. I mean, I would. I do.
Yeah. I mean, I can definitely say.
He hit .255 this year. I mean, his on-base percentage was not garbage. He hit 2 home runs, but 7 doubles. Played 53 games. Like, I'm very pleased to see him do well, even though it's not with the Phillies. I'm pleased to see him do well because, like so many, for so many, being in the Phillies for so long and then being pushed out, you know, it can't be a great experience. kind of screws you up a little bit. I mean, Sixto Sanchez was very happy. Like, he was, he felt it pitching against the Phillies, which hurt me a lot. It yeah, made me sad.
At least JP went to Seattle. At least they don't have to see him very often. I'm with you. I think it's just, I think we were so thirsty for one of these guys to work out. And, you know, some of these prospects that we're always talking about kind of rose to the next level where it would look, where it looked like, or they had a moment where it looked like, you know, yeah, this is going to work out, whether it was in the minors before they got to the majors or if it was for a couple of weeks while they were in the majors. Michael Franco would always was always good for a long weekend of making it look like he was going to be that guy. Dom Brown at one point looked like, okay, the prophecies are true. He's going to be that guy. J.P. Crawford kind of rose to the top of the crop, I think, as well at one point, just because of how well things were going. I mean, he struggled a lot and then came back in a big way. We all remember, I think John turned that into a T-shirt, that tweet of his, J.P. Crawford's, where he said, all it is motivation.
Yeah.
And like after that, it was just, you know, he went on a tear a little bit too. So, yeah, I think we all thought very highly of J.P. and we were all just very, very, very eager for one of these guys to work out and for that, for him to work out on the Phillies. And I don't think he'll have to achieve the highest overall success for people to qualify it as, well, you know, that's just another case of a guy like figuring it out after he leaves here. I think it's more like, I think it's more like, why can't, it just comes down to that thing that we've been talking about for weeks where it's just like, why can't we have that? Why can't we have nice things? I mean, look, we're sitting here talking about Didi and Gene Segura just being deserving of gold gloves. That's who's been playing JP's position. And those two guys can hit. So it's not even like we're really, you know, we're not like super in the hole here over the loss of JP Crawford. It's just like, why did we experiment with him at like third base? Why did we think we could jam him into another position? Why did we, you know, handle it this way? And, you know, that's kind of your answer as to why maybe it didn't work out here in a lot of ways. But, you know, it's just, I'm just sick of just seeing these like decisions get made and the payoff never being like for the Phillies. Yep. I mean, great. Again, we have Gene Segura now. I liked that trade when it happened. I liked that it kind of freed up that the Carlos Santana thing was over. You know, I wasn't like excited to see JP go, but it was like, all right, well, at least we know what the hell's going on.
Yeah.
At least we know
he'll get a chance there. We have no idea if he's ever going to get a chance here because no one knows what they're doing.
Yeah. So I'm glad. Honestly, I am glad to see, you know, I want Cesar to, why not, have success. And more importantly, I want JP to do well. I'm still rooting for him as well. While still, you know, not thinking, oh man, the Phillies really screwed this up. I don't think you can really even characterize it as that either. So it's just success happening elsewhere that isn't happening here.
Yep.
And that can weigh on you. All right, so we're going to get into some lighter topics like the 1993 World Series and the 2010 NLCS right after this first break.
Oh, fuck you, Justin.
Well, Liz, today is a special anniversary of two different things in Phillies lore. One is Joe Carter walking it off to win the World Series for the Blue Jays in 1993, a day and moment with which we are intimately familiar here in Phillies town. And also, fun fact, today is also the exact day in which Brian Wilson threw a ball that was low in the zone, but still in the strike zone, that Ryan Howard watched go by, struck out, to end the 2010 NLCS and allow the Giants to win their 21st National League pennant. Those scrappy, lovable Giants, they had beards and backstories, and oh, weren't they just so likable? Oh, it's so nice. And that happened the same day that Juan Uribe hit his famous two-out tie-breaking home run off the Phillies' Ryan Madsen in the eighth inning to win the game, 3-2. So, yay! Yay, another cool thing for this day to be, but this is exactly why I'm saying we need to come up with a name for this holiday so that we can, you know, celebrate it rather than just wallow in despair over the fact that these two devastating moments in Philly's history happened on it. So
what are we celebrating?
That we're alive, Liz. That these things happened and we are still alive. That they can't hurt us. They're in the past now. It's just words on the page. And we have our whole lives ahead of us where these things aren't going to happen a second time. Like these exact things aren't going to. Joe Carter's not going to walk off the Phillies again in the World Series. That's never going to happen. That's never going to happen again. Brian Wilson, I'm sure, is he just living in a teepee right now somewhere? In the middle of the nation.
Far I don't know.
I don't know what his deal is.
No one cares.
Yeah. So I mean, which thing do you want to dive into first here, Liz? I tried to put the idea out there today that Joe Carter beating the Phillies in the World Series, absolutely gutting moment for young me. Made me feel sports pain for the first time, and it was a lesson. And it was a good lesson because you feel smaller versions of that throughout the rest of history watching the Phillies and watching Philly sports teams. So that was a spike, you know, that was a much more intense version of the same feelings you feel when an Eagles game starts or the Phillies bullpen comes into the game. So it was an important formative lesson for me, but I tried to put the idea out there today that, you know, that was the last time the Blue Jays were in the World Series. Mm-hmm. That was 27 years ago. That is a long time. Since then, the Phillies have won the World Series. They've been back to the World Series twice. They've won the division five times. You know, it's been obviously not a fully dominant couple of decades for the Phillies, but they did find a way to do the thing they didn't do when Joe Carter beat them. So, you know, with enough time having passed, can we say that it's actually sadder for Blue Jays fans that's the last time they were in the World Series than it was that Joe Carter beat the Phillies?
I think that's fair. I mean, I think that our pain is more important because it's me and us. but, you know, moving out, zooming back, that's got to be tough. I mean, they spent a couple of years being competitive, but, you know, couldn't even make it to the World Series. And that team fell apart so fast, and they could have tried to keep it together a little longer, but they started doing the thing that the Astros did, and, you know, that's all she wrote so far.
Now, you're somebody who came into Phillies fandom a little later in life than like, let's say, somebody just being raised in front of a TV in the Delaware Valley. I think there's a generational component today because nobody lashed out at me for suggesting what I suggested today. It still remains a, like I said, very painful personal moment for me. But mostly the response was like, no, like, I'm sorry. I can still remember that moment distinctly. It still hurts. It'll never not hurt. And I think it's just one of those examples of like a generational thing where like, yes, I did see it, but I was six and I'm just kind of ready to be over it. I think people who saw it when they were, you know, teenagers or a little older, who were fully invested in that team, I think that's going to stay with them because they had fully formed brains when they saw it. And maybe it wasn't the first sports pain they felt, but maybe it was the worst, and they got it at, you know, a time when they were at their most hormonal or something. I think it is. I mean, you and I have operated in circles with Phillies fans who are like, never the Dodgers, always hate the Dodgers. The Dodgers suck. But you and I are like, it's the Dodgers. Who cares? I mean, you and I are rooting for the Dodgers right now in the World Series. Like that. Yeah. That doesn't hurt us as much.
No, it doesn't. Like my old boss at the Good Fight, Peter, is one of those never Dodgers, fuck the Dodgers, always fuck the Dodgers guys. And I never understood it. Like, when the Phillies were directly playing them in the playoffs for those couple of years, you know, it was definitely that. But they always beat the crap out of them. So, you know, some of the best moments of playoffs are against the Dodgers. So I can't hate them. The Phillies beat them.
Yeah, like to us, the Dodgers are just the team the Phillies ran over to get to the World Series twice.
Twice in a row.
So for us, it's, you know, oh, and that hilarious comeback game where the Phillies were down 9-2 and won it in the final two innings.
Yes.
In 2000, I guess that was 2010. So, you know, our memories of the Dodgers are much more pleasant. So we don't really harbor those. Our feelings against the Giants, for me, remain. I still...
Fuck them forever.
I'm not the most pissed anymore, but I still think, you know, yeah, fuck the Giants. Definitely.
The Cardinals can also... The Cardinals can also fuck right off.
Yeah, everybody hates the Cardinals. I think that's fair. That'll live on forever. I think Joe Carter pain is fully warranted, but it is, like all things, generational. And I think there will come a time where the loudest Phillies voices in the room are not people who saw that happen live. And for that reason, it will have less of an impact. I think it'll just be, you know, a devastating bookmark on the pages of Phillies history. But, you know, there will be a time when it is not the go-to sports pain memory for people.
But what will their sports pain memory be?
Yeah, there were no others. So, gosh, what are we going to pick?
It's not like there weren't any others, but like on that grand a scale, the Phillies haven't. The Phillies have, it's just been like a dull ache of crap.
Well, somebody who wasn't alive in 1993, but was rooting for the Phillies in 2011 and watched Ryan Howard ground out and pretty much his career end with a ripping of his ACL mm-hmm. or his Achilles. That's probably pretty bad.
The Cardinals. I said the Cardinals for sure. Just like, but what will the Phillies fans after that? There are plenty of Phillies fans who aren't, who that isn't even one of their memories.
Maybe we just haven't gotten to it yet. That might also be the answer.
Because I guess that's true.
Right now we have a lot of regular season games, but those devastating losses, they hurt a lot. And you can tell if they're really bad, they hurt a lot the next day when you wake up the next day and you're still mad. But for the most part, you can laugh off regular season losses, I think, in a hurry. I mean, that's what we do on the dirty inning. I mean,
there are 162 of those things. Jesus.
But so like the white flag game and everything, or Sean O'Sullivan getting hit in the throat with a throwback from his catcher.
Oh, God. Yeah,
stuff like that. That's like, feels like, oh, that's a low point. But also, this year, the series, the doubleheader in Buffalo against the Blue Jays, like that was bad. That was a low point. But also that stuff gets paved over because it's among so many other games. Postseason stuff is so singular and so, you know, national that you can remember this stuff because watching it is like an event. Regular season game is, you know, you turn it on in the third inning, maybe while you're just relaxing, or you get home from work. You know, it's a baseball game. It's becomes part of your routine in the summer when there's not a pandemic going on. Postseason baseball is obviously different. And since the Phillies haven't even been to the postseason since 2011, it's probably harder for that pain or a pain like it to occur for people. And that's what I think painful moments have happened to the Phillies since then. I mean, you could just point to the last out of every season in that they made the postseason but didn't win the World Series as painful moments for people since Joe Carter. But it's kind of standout in how it went down. I mean, getting walked off on even in the regular season, it sucks. For it to happen in the postseason sucks. For it to be the last game of your postseason run sucks. For it to be the last game of your postseason run and you're on the World Series, it's bad.
That's such a shitty way to lose the World Series.
So I don't know. I guess I preach getting over it, not because I think people should or because I think it's easy, but just because I think it's healthy.
It's going to become a goiter on the side of your neck eventually.
Right. Like, it's just because it's a healthy approach. And I wrote something 2 years ago on just kind of like looking that moment in the eye and not avoiding it. And just on, you know, some of the more interesting things about it that, like, you know, a lot of people blame Jim Fregosi for it, for putting Mitch Williams out there after he had blown the lead in that 15-14 loss the Phillies had that John Stolness and others have said is actually the worst loss of that World Series, that they should have won that game. And if they win that game, then the Joe Carter thing
doesn't matter. That,
yeah. So you know, and even if the Phillies had beaten the Blue Jays that night, they still had to play another game. They were not, it's not like the World Series was on the line for everybody, just the Blue Jays.
Yep.
There's other components to that, and the fact that Joe Carter is like the nicest man in the world, and the '93 Phillies are proven to, in some cases, not be that. So that also, for me, that also kind of, you know, in time makes it easy. And as I've said before, you know, 4 years later, which in 1997, when interleague play started, Joe Carter came to Philly, got booed at the All-Star game in 96. And then in 97, he broke some kind of hitting record. Someone told me what it was and I already forget. And the place gave him, you know, standing ovation. And, you know, that was only 4 years later. The wound was still fresh, but for some reason to me, 1997 and 1993 feel very far apart. Yeah. I don't know why. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that, yeah, I agree. Makes sense to me.
So, anyway, that was my rambling Joe Carter thoughts. They're not a whole lot different than they were last year. This is mostly just because this is a milestone for a lot of people, and certainly for the people who lived through it, whether you were a kid like me, for whom it was just like, oh God, like this was not what was supposed to happen. You know, you're almost watching it like it's a movie. Those 93 Phillies were just like a baseball team in a movie, you know, underdogs, last place team, worst to first. Bunch of like funny guys who are best friends who come together as one and like take down the jerk Braves and then go into the World Series. And then the movie just ends with the wrong thing happening. And you're like, well, I don't like this. I don't like this at all. Or you're someone who actually understands baseball and is watching it as a sport because you're a teenager or older. And you're just like, wow, this sucks just because of what's happening. And, you know, the thing that happened. It's never going to stop being a part of this history. And how do you think the end of the 2010 NLCS compares to Joe Carter, since they share the same date in history? As far as pain goes, this is what I kind of meant by generational. It depends. Like, were you really invested in the 2010 Phillies, or were you really invested in the 93 Phillies? And you know, that's going to obviously factor into which ending was more painful. But just from an objective kind of like baseball pain situation, was Joe Carter walking it off in the World Series? How close to that is losing the 2010 NLCS?
I think it's pretty close. I know it's not losing in the World Series, but when you look at the context, it's bad because it's, you know, Roy Halladay in his best season ever, and one of the best seasons any pitcher has ever had in the history of the game. He can't get there, and the Phillies can't get him there, and you know it ends even earlier the next year. Like, in context, it's really rough.
Yeah, it's, I mean, Roy Halladay did pretty much everything he could to, yeah. He did his job.
A year from now we'll be talking about how he really really did everything he could to get them there. Couldn't.
Yeah. And I mean, what comes to mind for you for the, because it's a little more personal, I'd say, for us, the 2010 yeah. NLCS. We were, you know, obviously I was watching in 1993. It was the first year I was really into baseball. I was six
years
old.
That's my very first baseball memory.
Yeah. In 2010, you know, we're fully formed Phillies fans. Mm-hmm. We are, you know, irrational adults who are glared at for making loud noises in rooms in which we are watching a Phillies game.
Yep.
So, you know, at this point, the Phillies are good. They've been to the World Series twice in a row. The Giants are an upstart squad. It seemed, you know, while the pitching matchups were blockbuster for this series, it did seem like at the end of the day, it was like, yeah, but, you know, we got this, right?
Yeah.
You know, Halladay, Oswalt, Hamels, a solid offense versus Tim Lincecum, Matt Cain, Jonathan Sanchez, like, you know, Mike Fontenot was starting for the Giants in 2010. Like, mm-hmm. come on, like, do we really have to? But no, they got hot. They had a funny, quirky closer. We're all aware of what Cody Ross did during this during the series. And, you know, I mean, before I get into my personal experiences, like, how did you, like, game to game, if I throw some, do you think it would stir up some personal memories for you if I threw some moments from
yeah.
these games at you that you would remember where you
were?
Oh,
yeah.
All right. So I know we say Cody Ross, and it's just like, oh, Cody Ross. But, like, I kind of didn't really remember exactly, like, what he did and what he was doing. Like, but in the first two games of this series, he had three home runs. He had two home runs in game one. Lincecum and Halladay went tit for tat for the first two innings, pretty much. But then both teams scored a run in the third. So, I mean, do you remember game one, like the Giants winning in Philadelphia? That part I remember, cause I was like, oh crap. Like, I did not want to lose a game at home. The Giants were the team that came out of the, divisional series that I did not want to face because they were hot. So, like, do you remember, Brian Wilson striking out Shane Victorino to end the game, and just the fact that, like, game one, the Phillies lost at home, and which was not supposed to happen, and they only lost by a run. So, like, do you remember that or where you were for that?
I do. I had invited one of my coworkers over to my house to watch. She was a Yankees fan. And I invited her over to watch the game, and she slowly watched me get drunker and drunker as the game went on out of nerves and, you know, disappointment. Like, cause you always want to win the first game, especially, you know, and it's at home. Like, you really, I remember feeling like this is not a good sign. This, what's happening now bodes, I don't think this bodes well. It bodes poorly. If they can't be the Giants. I don't understand.
So I was at the Treasure Island Music Festival in San Francisco.
What kind Treasure of music Island, festival is that?
The Treasure Island, LCD Sound System was there.
Oh, nice.
That band that the name is just exclamation points that I've never known how to...
Me either, yeah.
...say it is there. D'Antwoord was there, the South African... band. So I was there with a couple of people, one of the other interns at the magazine I was interning at the time. My sister had gotten me a ticket because it was right around my birthday, and she was like, you should always do something for your birthday. And I was broke because I was, you know, interning at a magazine. So a group of us went to this music festival, and I happened to find a tent where they were like, yeah, you can use the internet on these computers in this tent. And I was repeatedly going back to this. And once the game started, I couldn't stop myself. I would go out, watch something, kind of circle back and pop into the tent and, like, you know, leave everybody else just to, like, check the game day, just see what was going on. At one point, my friend found me and was like, oh, there you are. And, like, brought me drinks and tried to, like, you know, hey, yeah. And I was just like, yeah, cool. Just give me a second.
I'm busy.
And, I slowly watched the numbers, you know, on the screen add up to a Phillies loss, which was devastating. I think for a lot of these, just the period of my life I was in, like these playoff runs that ended too early for the Phillies, for some reason, a lot of them, I just ended up in a place where I was watching them slowly lose on a computer screen, and it makes your heart hurt.
Yeah.
Like it's very bad for your chest.
Yeah. It's you lose something of yourself at that point.
So in game two, The Phillies pulled it out in Philadelphia. They managed to win one of the two games, and I believe this was the game that Chase Utley and Jonathan Sanchez squared off, which was hilarious. Where Jonathan Sanchez took offense to something Chase Utley said or did, and the ball bounced, and Chase Utley just kind of like shoveled it back towards the pitcher's mound for him, and as he was jogging to first after either getting hit by a pitch or walking. And Jonathan Sanchez was like, I'm mad about this. And, his teammates had to come out and calm him down. I'm pretty sure Chase Utley is seen, mouthing the words like, what? Oh, whatever.
Who are you again?
He's going like, what? Or oh, fuck that. I think he says like whatever you're upset about is nothing. And also, Chase Utley is just not going to engage in anything like that. That's just not going to happen. As the Phillies wound up winning 6-1, thanks in large part to a Jimmy Rollins 3-run double. So they went up 6-1, and that's the score that they wound up winning the game. Roy Oswalt pitched a magnificent game.
Yes.
I think this is the game that he runs through the stop sign at third base.
Yes. Oh, jeez.
which was awesome. Yeah, which third base coach is trying to slow him down, and he just absolutely not. Which, honestly, yeah, I mean, if he gets thrown out, then yeah, we're all complaining about it. But, like, at the time, honestly, I was just like, yeah, we need so many runs for this series. The Giants made me so uncomfortable. And I was just like, any way we can score. Like, I get holding him at third and being like, all right, yeah, but we also got to be careful because we don't want to give up outs. But I was also like, we got to be, I don't know, being aggressive really appealed to me in that moment because it was just like, God, we just need as much as we can get from this team because, you know, as hot as the Giants are, you got to score whenever you can. So I was happy he did that. But again, you know, if he gets thrown out, obviously I'm not. But anyway, Roy Oswalt, great playoff moment, also pitched 8 innings, allowed only 1 earned run and 3 hits and 3 walks, struck out 9. So that was, God, that was probably the best start of this playoff series for the Phillies. I think for that game, I might have been watching in a bar in San Francisco. I used to take a bus and a train back to where I was staying. So I think I had to leave to go catch one of those. And as I was leaving the bar wearing a Phillies hat, like a girl like kind of playfully knocked my hat off, and I was like grumbling about it, and then later was like, oh, actually I think she like wanted to like talk to me. So that was stupid. But I was catching a bus, and I was all worked up about a baseball game. So obviously, you know, great person to talk to in that particular moment. Do you have any particular personal moments about game two?
Baseball has denied you a friendship, a relationship with someone. Thank you, Phillies. I watched this at home with beer and my cell phone, texting my dad and, you know, my friends and Twitter. I was on Twitter. Yep. It was a good game. I remember feeling so relieved.
Yeah, I mean, if they had lost both those games, it would have just...
It would have been despair. Mm-hmm. Because it's hard to come back from that. Coming back from a, you know, one game deficit is at least, you only have to win one game to do that.
And this was the last home run Cody Ross hit in this series, for the record. He wasn't, you know, he wasn't done hitting, but it was the last home run he hit, which... Yep. God, I don't even know why I'm mentioning that, but I guess let's just rip the Band-Aid off here. Cody Ross hit 350 in this series. He went 7-for-20, which honestly doesn't even sound like that much, but you know, a playoff series, obviously it is. He had 3 home runs, 3 doubles, only 5 RBI, but it just felt like he was knocking in runs every time he was at the plate. He had 2 walks, 1385 OPS through 6 games. You know, it's just the kind of guy you need on your team. When you, you know, when you're going on a playoff run and you're a team like the Giants were that year, you need a nonsense guy from nowhere getting hot for no reason. And you know what? In the World Series, which the Giants won, but in the World Series, Cody Ross hit 235 through 5 games. He only had 1 home run and 1 double. So it was just against the Phillies that he was able to achieve that level of success. Yeah. There, we talked about it. We're done. Game three.
That was a time I remember, you know, thinking, why can't that happen to the Phillies? Like, the Phillies get good things. They had Roy Halladay, and he was great, but that's not the same as someone getting, like, a hitter getting really hot in the playoffs. Like, why can't that happen? Why can't one player figure it, you know, just go on a tear? Why can that never happen?
Yeah. I mean, most of the time it's the missing ingredient, and the Giants just didn't seem like they were missing anything in this series. They had it. They were making it work, and they made it work in game three, beating the Phillies 3-0. I don't recall what I was doing for this particular game on a Tuesday at 4:00 Eastern time. But I was on the West Coast. So it was at 1:00. It was an afternoon game. So I don't have particular memory of this. Might have been in the office. Probably wasn't. Basically Cole Hamels versus Matt Cain. Obviously the Phillies got shut out. Cody Ross hit one of his RBI hits, which, cool, man. Chase Utley had a ball go off his glove that he was diving for. He also had another ball that fooled him, as the, you know, he just was not there for it. And Matt Cain just kind of dominated the Phillies lineup. Sucked. Everybody was pissed. And the Phillies were down 2-1 in the series. It was game three. Brian Wilson gets the save. It's his second save of the NLCS. Why don't we just, you know, rip a second Band-Aid off? Brian Wilson, thoughts?
I hate him. I hated him. I always hated him. I thought he was obnoxious and stupid. I hated him so much. I had nothing. Fucking hated him. He was a douchebag. He wore Affliction and, like, Ed Hardy shit. I mean, this was, of course, the height of that. It's not like the Phillies didn't have guys that did that. They did.
I was gonna say, careful.
Brian Howard. I mean, and Chase Utley, I think, was even seen in it from time to time. But you know, it all felt like such a fucking put on. He was it was just such a stupid try hard bit. I hated him. I hated him so much. I thought he was not genuine and sincere, and he was good, and he was beating the Phillies, and I hated him.
And I remember his voice didn't really. When I first heard his voice, I was like, oh, it's kind of doesn't really match up with with what I had. I actually think afterwards, I think when he was with the Giants, I think I passed him on the street in Philadelphia when the Phillies were playing the Giants. I was like walking up, I want to say 15th Street, and he was walking the other way, having looked like he just like completed a run or something. And I was like, wow, I can't believe I'm that close to a guy I hated so much, which would have been like years before, but still. He was part of the Giants teams like this, that the, you know, these even year Giants teams, they had such a trendy quality to them, you know, because like the years between their championship runs, they weren't, I don't think they like just missed, you know,
no,
I think they were not part of the playoff equation, but then the next year they would be. So they obviously had really good players. You know, Pablo Sandoval was really good for the Giants. Tim Lincecum, obviously, Matt Cain. They had great pitching there. Madison Bumgarner, this was the beginning of him. They got a great year out of Ryan Vogelsong. You know, they had good players on their team, but they also had just like a lot of fill-in guys who had effective enough years that they were able to carry them the rest of the way. But in 2011, well, actually, I'm wrong. In 2011, they finished second in the NL West. So they did kind of just miss the playoffs that year. For some reason, I was really convinced they were just not a part of the... In 2013, though, they only won 76 games and finished in third. So that was just, you know, I guess you could call it an off year. I don't know. Oh, and Buster Posey. Have to mention just Buster Posey, because I actually like Buster Posey. I can't believe I'm saying that, but I do. He's just an awesome young catcher that we were watching play baseball. He just happened to play for the team that was the antithesis of my fandom at that point in my life. But yeah, I mean, he was a big part of their success too. So Wilson, I know like around that time, there were all kinds of like stories that popped up on like Reddit and stuff about his interactions with Phillies fans off the field. And like, I don't know, he just seemed like one of those aggro douchebags who was like part of the trendy Giants, where it was like fear the beard and shit. Yeah. And, you know, closers, I mean, I always talk about the short lifespan of sluggers, but closers, man, like it can, if you're not Mariano Rivera, your career, it can all go away in a second. It seems like one year you're an effective closer shutting down the World Series, the next year, you know, oh, my arm hurts, my elbow hurts, or, you know, something weird happened, or I didn't train just exactly right. And or I lost a couple miles per hour off my fastball, or my slider isn't working the way it's supposed to. Just seems like, man, it just seems like you can be the best closer in baseball, get your money, and then kind of not be heard from again.
Yep.
And in Wilson's case, how long was he a really effective closer? You know, obviously 2010 was his year. Like he did own that year. That was huge. But like looking at the stats, you know, 2010, he had a 1.81 ERA through 70 games in the regular season. He led the league with 48 saves. The next year his ERA was over 3, which is still, you know, not bad in 57 games. That's not bad. He was still an all-star, but, you know, it's quite different from a season where you keep your ERA under 2 for 70 games. And then after that, he just kind of went to shit. Like, yeah. He got hurt 2012, appeared in only 2 games, went to the Giants in 2013, appeared in only 18 games, came back in 2014, finished 6 games for the Dodgers after appearing in 61 and had a 4.66 ERA. And then after that,
it was over.
So, yeah, didn't have much left in him after the 2010 World Series. So yeah, I mean that like I said, it just seemed like he was part of the trend that year, and he kind of came to define it. He was one of their most popular players, if not the most popular player, and for good reason. He had a great season, but yeah, from our perspective, just a flaming fucking douchebag. fun stuff. So game 4. We'll finish up here. Game 4, another one-run loss, which really came to define this series. You know, these were all close losses. The Phillies lost the first one by 1. They had a 5-run margin in Game 2, which was the widest margin of this series. They lost Game 3 by 3 runs. They lost Game 4 by 1 run. And they would lose Game 5 by 2 runs. But in Game 4, the Giants won again. I'm pretty sure I was watching this in Davis. Juan Uribe had another good moment in this one. Madison Bumgarner and Joe Blanton. So this was back when this is how playoff rotations worked, where you would actually pitch, you know, a fourth starter and not just like use the bullpen or whatever. Buster Posey opened the scoring. The Phillies managed to score in the fifth inning. They actually scored four runs off Madison Bumgarner thanks to singles from Ben Francisco and Carlos Ruiz. Joe Blanton had a successful sacrifice bunt. Victorino shot one up the middle. And then Carlos Ruiz was thrown out at the plate trying to score two runs on the play. So here I am talking about how aggressiveness will win us the series, and then they try it again, and Polanco had a two-run double. Jason Wirth got hit by a pitch, and then a wild pitch while Jimmy Rollins was batting brought in the fourth run. So, you know, the Phillies managed to – they broke through. They took the lead that inning, 4-3. Or 4-2. The Giants scored another run in the bottom of the inning, and then two more in the bottom of the sixth to make it 5-4. And then the Phillies scored again in the eighth with back-to-back doubles by Ryan Howard and Jason Wirth. Okay, this I remember. I was on a bus. I don't know to where I was going or where I was leaving from. I think I was leaving the city. I think I was leaving San Francisco and getting on a bus. And because they had the game playing on the radio. And at this point, I was just so desperate for multiple good things to happen in a row for the Phillies, because it was starting to feel like the narrative was against the Phillies. It started to feel like the Phillies were the bad guy in the Giants story, which felt bad. It was like a cheese grater on my soul. So when Wirth doubled after Howard had doubled, I was just like, oh, my God, like a good thing happened. Yes. Yeah, like that's something in our favor has occurred. It just felt like they were few and far between at this point. And even that four-run rally had a lot to do with, like, the Phillies were hitting, but it also was like an intentional walk, a hit-by-pitch, a wild pitch, and it was just like, okay, like we're not super on top of it here. So, but the Phillies obviously didn't do enough scoring. They lost that game 6-5. Any particular memories on that one?
No. I'm mostly out of memories in this period until we get to the last game.
Yeah, let's just power through here. Game five, I watched with my sister at a bar in Davis, California. I remember being very excited when Jason Wirth hit a huge home run to right field that gave the Phillies a 4-2 lead rather than a 3-2 lead in the top of the ninth inning. And that just – this isn't true, but it just felt like the only time – an insurance run happened. It was just like you were holding your breath this whole series, and the Phillies only being up 3-2 with the bottom of the ninth still to go, I was not comfortable. So when Jason Wirth hit that home run, it was just like, I can relax the slightest bit. And it was just, oh God, I was so grateful. I was so grateful he hit that home run. I remember it was so rarely did I have moments of pure excitement instead of dread during that series. And that was one of them. I remember turning to my sister. I'd like just taken a drink. And so I gave like the, eyes wide smile going like while I was drinking in celebration. So then game six, we watched my sister, my brother-in-law, and I all watched together in a bar full of Giants fans, UC Davis students.
It
was rough. Everybody, it's really tough to be watching a series like this in enemy territory. It was a weird time. I did not go to the World Series parade. I think everybody else in the office I was working in went, but I was like, you know what? I've already been to one of these.
I'm good. And,
it's the team that I wanted to see win it. So I don't need to see this. So I was talking about the Sanchez Utley thing. That actually happened in this game. That was in game six.
Oh, okay.
So my bad. That happened and the benches cleared, but no one was ejected or anything. Cody Ross hit a double, blah blah blah. Brian Wilson strikes out Ryan Howard. We all know what happened. Juan Uribe hit a home run off Ryan Madsen. Yeah, it sucks. Yeah. And I just walking home, and you know, everybody was excited. You know, it was exciting. Everybody was honking their horns and stuff, and you know, he just kind of, it was a bummer. I remember being like really, really bummed, and maybe that's the difference. I was very bummed and low emotionally after that game. Joe Carter, it felt like an attack, you know. that felt like a ha, whereas this was like you know, like it was almost like the Blue Jays jumped out of a closet and yelled at you, whereas the Giants have been like tapping on your window for 6 days.
I thought of that. I thought of this in terms of it's like being shot in the head or or stabbed in the gut. The result is the same, but one is quick and one takes a while.
We only can think of our sports losses as violent crimes.
Oh my God, I need to be committed.
Here's a wild stat for you, Liz. In the 2010 NLCS, the Phillies actually outscored the Giants 20-19, but lost 4-2.
Yep, yes, they did.
And now wild, and none of those games were particularly high scoring. They just, you know, it's just that 6-1 game where they, yeah, that's fun, right? Fun.
I was my cousin Vinny and his wife, his now wife Lula, got married in Boston that weekend, and I couldn't watch the game.
Good.
I couldn't watch it. Under threat of my mother being angry. I was told not to look at my phone during this. I mean, after a while, it was easy not to. I had a nice wedding. I'll say this was the nicest wedding I've ever been to. It was at the Four Seasons. It was top shelf open bar. I got to eat filet mignon for dinner.
Whoa.
This was a fancy fucking wedding. It was incredible. It was the most insane wedding I've ever been to. And I could not enjoy it. I couldn't enjoy it because I'm sitting there looking at my phone, checking every 5 or 10 minutes. I'm running into the bathroom to get away from my mother so I can check my phone. And my cousins, you know, my cousin Vinny and his brother Michael are both baseball fans and were periodically asking me how things were going. So I didn't feel as bad. And when Ryan Howard was struck out looking, I ran right after I, you know, put my phone back in my bag. I ran into Vinny and he said, "So, how's it going?" I'm like, "They lost." He's like, "Fuck, they lost." He's already 3 sheets to the wind. He's already so drunk. And he's like, "Come here." So he pulls me to the bar. He's like, "Broom, coming through." So we cut in this long line because it's free top shelf booze. And that side of my family knows how to drink. He's like, "We need 2 shots. He's like, "Of what?" "Of scotch."
Who cares? What's in arm's reach?
And so he's like, "Well," he said, "fuck the Giants." I'm like, "Fuck the Giants." And he's like, "Get her another one." And that's how I spent the rest of my night.
Well, that's that is the best possible way to, the appropriate way to spend the rest of that night. I mean, you're lucky you were somewhere where there was top shelf available. You had VIP status with the groom next to you.
I was pretty lucky. Thank God.
That is fortunate. Yeah. I remember walking home from that bar in Davis and back to my sister and brother-in-law's apartment. And I'm sure we had a couple of drinks, but it was a much more somber, I think, than even just like, "Let's drink our feelings" moment, which you can do at a wedding after a sporting loss. So yeah, I mean, well, look, we did it. We talked about the 2010 NLCS.
Yes, we did. Now it's over.
Well, I think it's my least favorite series of all time. I think it's worse than 2011. I do.
Yeah. I mean, 2011 is terrible for different reasons, but like this was it. They could have done it this year. You know?
Yeah. 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 I guess it's tough to verbalize exactly why, but it was because like I said, the Phillies
were the Giants. That's
the Phillies. The Phillies were the antagonists. You know, yeah, I think the country was like, they had been to the World Series twice, so they were the big bad Phillies, and the Giants were the upstart Giants. And this was the start of even year Giants bullshit. So,
and then being lovable forever, like we got to be lovable for like a year, and then everyone was against us. Like teams like the Giants held on to that goodwill for ages. Like,
yeah,
fuck them. Like that's why. Like they didn't deserve to win. It was an accident that they won. I hate it. It is so painful because remembering what they could have won and didn't, because that was as close as they got. Again, that's the farthest they've been since.
Yeah. And I wrote something in October 2016 on The Good Fight. It was the year the Cubs beat the even year Giants to go to the World Series. And, yeah, it was 2016. They were, you know, primed. The Giants were primed to do it again. But it was the year the Cubs went on to win the, you know, break their own curse and win the World Series. And, yeah, it felt good. It felt good that that was finally over. And I was mad. Like Grant Brisby, obviously a big Giants guy, still at SB Nation at the time, now at The Athletic. He wrote a story that same day, I think, called "The Cubs Killed the Even Year," which didn't exist anyway. And I just wanted to be like, "No, man, no, absolutely not. It totally existed. Like, do not, do not pull away from this. Like,
you have your team has 3 World Series rings in the span of 6 years." Get all the way the fuck out of here with that. You don't get to say what does and does not exist. You are not on the losing end of any of those series, so shut up forever. Your feelings about this are irrelevant. Irrelevant to me.
And we love Grant.
Oh God, Grant is the best. But
this this is all Giants-based vitriol.
Yes, really. That's a team I'll never be able to be... I'll never be able to forgive them. That's my evil nemesis team forever.
Yeah. And I think that's the way it'll be for me as well. I included in that story a picture of my nephew wearing a Phillies onesie because he had been born since the time I had been out in California and watched those games with my sister. And I felt like, okay, I honestly, it did feel like something had ended. It felt like this chapter has come to a close, and it did. It felt good. So I think you're right. That's an indication that this was the Giants are my, like, I think I leveled down that day. I think I was like, okay, I don't have to feel as strongly against the Giants as I did before because their little bullshit thing is over. And it made me feel a little better, but the 2010 NLCS will, I think, barring some more awful experience, will be the worst series of my lifetime. I hated it so much. That'll do it for this episode.
Sorry, just one thing. It's because there was never a point where we felt like I was on pins and needles because I was waiting for it to end. Because I'm waiting for them to play themselves out of it, because it felt, after the first game, it really felt like that was going to happen. Because Halladay didn't have a great game that first game. And it felt like if after his amazing regular season and his performance in the last series, that if he wasn't able to do well, how was everyone else going to do? You know?
Yeah.
Exactly. If everyone else has been affected by that series so much, let's strap in because the ride gets off here.
Yeah. Well, that'll do it for this episode of Continued Success. Thank you for listening. As always, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and download all your favorite podcasts that are part of the Good Fight podcast family, including Hit and Season with John Stolness, The Dirty Ending with myself and Dr. Trevor Strunk, and our Patreon at patreon.com/hit and season. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next time on Continued Success.